listener production. Hello, welcome to this episode of The Briefing. I'm Sasha Barbagat. It goes without saying that the internet has revolutionised how we function as a society. We talk a lot about the impact things like emails, social media, and data sharing have had on how we work and play. But what about when it comes to sex work? Pre-internet, working women would sit in hotel rooms waiting for calls from a landline phone, or hang in doorways of brothels, or wait on the street for clients. They could only advertise in the paper, which was technically illegal, and many had very little agency over the work they did. Now, people produce, edit, and upload their own content to sites like OnlyFans without ever seeing a client in the flesh. They can advertise their services on social media. They can work safely from the comfort of their own home. But the internet has also changed how people buy and sell sex in person. In part two of The Briefing's four-part series on sex work in Australia in 2024, we are speaking with a former sex worker and now brothel owner called Kate about the changes she's seen over her career and how the internet has made the game safer. Kate, thank you for joining us on The Briefing today. First things first, how did you get started in the sex work industry?
Basically, I dropped out of university and I was doing a teaching degree and I was waitressing and I met some sex workers and I was impressed. I found them impressive as people. Yeah, so that's how, and then I thought I'll give it a go.
And so, what sort of work were you doing to start with?
Sex work. I was working privately in the city of Sydney in a unit. There weren't mobile phones then, so I had a landline. And I'd sit in there for hours, generally in the daytime. I had a unit that another woman that I met had left. She'd retired, so I took over her unit and I was in the city of Sydney working off of our landline.
So before we started today, you corrected me. So we say brothels colloquially, but there's actually the term sex services premises. Is that right? So I'll use that terminology. When did you start working in sex service premises?
When I was 24, I started in the industry when I was 2021, working privately and, you know, having an exciting time running around doing other things as well as sex work. And then I met a woman who used to work at A Touch of Class back then and it was very busy. And she said, oh, it's so busy and, you know, I'm making lots of money and it's great. And I thought, oh, that sounds good. So I went in and went there and applied to work at A Touch of Class in Surry Hills.
Mm-hmm. And how then did your career progress from that point when you started working in an actual premises?
Well, I found it actually really empowering because you go in, you spend your time and then you leave and that's it. You're not waiting for the phone to call. I found it busier. I like the company of the other women, which I found good company. I felt safe. I actually found it very empowering working there.
So how long did that go on before you started running your own premises?
I worked there and then it briefly got shut down for a while and then I worked in another place. So basically for 6 years and then I bought premises and I renovated it. So I worked for 6 years in establishments, in two establishments. I saved my money and then I started my own place.
Mm. And what was that like, getting that off the ground?
Hard, very hard. Yeah, the local thug, I went to meet them and introduce myself and say I'd be opening up my business and I was told that I wouldn't be and that he said to me, I won't say his name, but he's no longer with us, but he said, oh, no, you won't. That's my street. You won't be opening up a business there. I got kind of scared. But anyway, as luck would have it, when the time came to open my business, he had legal problems of his own and he didn't have the time or to bother with getting rid of stopping me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, it was hard. And then I got taken to court by the council, Sydney City Council, because back then it was not a legal use. And so they took me to court. Then I established that there'd been prostitution on the premises for a number of years previously, established existing use right. But it was really hard. It was very hard starting a business back then, especially if you didn't have, you're doing it yourself.
Mm. And so from that point, you have been running your own premises.
Yes.
Do you still work as well?
No.
No, you just run the premises.
No.
Tell me about then how it would work with the premises pre-internet. You've explained how there was a landline service that was kind of a referral thing.
Yeah.
You've got your own business now, and I'm speaking pre-internet days.
Sure.
How did you get the word out there?
So basically, again, word of mouth is the best form of referral. Then there'd be advertising in the Telegraph and also your local papers, but technically it was illegal to advertise it. They were just choosing not to prosecute us. But essentially that was the three forms: referrals, Telegraph, local papers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. We didn't have red lights. We wanted to be unobtrusive. So we had a terrace house in Potts Point, and there were places like with flashing red lights, but our clients didn't want to be noticed. They wanted to get in and get out discreetly. A lot of them came in the back way. You had private waiting rooms. The idea was that they didn't want to be noticed. They wanted anonymity, and that was very important to them.
Okay. So let's talk then about technology and specifically the internet, which you have run your business pre and post internet. We've talked about the pre, pretty rudimentary in terms of advertising, relying a lot on word of mouth. How have you seen the industry, specifically sex services premises, change since the internet came in?
Well, radical change with the internet, plus accompanying the internet is the mobile phones. The two go together. So pretty much for premises, the website, you can promote yourself, you can have a lot of photographs, you can have, ladies can put their photos without faces on, you know, so it's been made like a radical change to the industry, and then mobile phones even more so. So women can work privately more easily, they've got a lot more autonomy, you don't need to work in a place anymore. Whereas formerly, if you were private, you were generally like, I'm generalising, a street worker.
Mm.
There were like a middle rung, or there was the houses. So then it gave a lot more independence to women, which I don't have an issue with. I think it's fine. And to the places, it means that a lot more people could find out about you by Googling you. It's been very empowering. As long as people aren't underage, that are, you know, like they're not being compelled by anyone, that's really important, that people are choosing freely to work in this industry.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like there's less of a stigma associated with sex work, in part because of the internet? I know for my generation, so I'm a millennial, I'm exposed to people who use things like OnlyFans, people who have sold pictures of themselves online. To me, it's just another job. I don't view it as anything good or bad or otherwise. It's a profession. However, you look back even 20, 30 years, it was very different. And I feel like the internet has played a role in legitimizing sex work. Would you agree that there is less of a stigma around it now?
Absolutely. And because there's so many different options, and then it's also publicized more. So I agree that there definitely is less of a stigma. However, when you're dealing with people like banks, they do discriminate against people in our industry. And if few of the major banks, actually, if they know you're in that industry, they actually just won't, they'll withdraw their services, etc. So generally in society, yes, less stigma. But when it comes to banks, or I'd say schools, it's not probably a selling point.
What do you mean by schools? Do you mean like if you're a parent sending your kids to a school and they know what you do for work?
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely.
Have you experienced that?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, it's like if someone wants to hurt you, they don't hurt you, they hurt your children.
Mm.
Because they spread rumours of, it's happened to me, you know, they send an email to the other parents about you and your background.
Wow.
But I mean, again, you just soldier on. You just ignore it, and then you find the parents sympathise with the child rather than with the, because they do it anonymously. But yeah, it's discrimination's there, but it's just a little bit more subtle.
Mm.
It's like was previously, it was, but yeah, dealing with banks, or even, for instance, insurance companies, they penalise us, the insurance we pay on our buildings. Like I've got a concrete building with fire escapes and it's really safe, but our insurance is through the roof. We've never made an insurance claim. So again, you're discriminated against. So, but then you just go, well, that goes with the territory. You can't, no point whining. You just got to work around it.
Do you think that'll continue to change? I mean, OnlyFans, and I use OnlyFans as the reference because I feel like that is the one that has cracked into the mainstream so much in terms of, you know, there are so many OnlyFans creators on TikTok. It's talked about in the news. It's talked about in papers. We're talking about it right now on a podcast. Do you expect then that the stigma around it that does still exist is going to continue to ease as time goes on, given the internet's, you know, pushing it out to more people?
Yes, because of the fact that it's in the media more and all sorts of aspects of the industry. And also because it shows role models of women and men that are intelligent, that have a lot of options, whereas traditionally the cliche was, oh, this person is stupid, they can't do anything else, or they're desperate or they're on drugs. You see women and men that are smart, empowered, that have a lot of options, that are choosing to go into this industry. You know, they might be a law student, they might be a graduate. Ladies that work in our premises, a few of them have degrees. You know, there are other things that they can be doing, but they choose to work in this industry because of the flexibility, the financial returns. Yeah, so yeah, absolutely.
Before I let you go, how many of the women who work on your premises are supplementing the work they're doing in person with internet work as well? Is it kind of existing sex workers using online sex work as a side hustle?
The women that I know, but personally that are working in premises or don't tend to do internet because they can make more money from working in person. But then I have heard of a woman in the Blue Mountains and she solely focuses on the internet and she makes a very healthy income. So I'd say if you specialised and you really went out of your way and you kept changing your content, then yes, but the women I know tend to focus because they want to work and they want to leave and they don't want the hassle. Because the thing with that is you're online, you're when the client wants you.
Yeah, you're constantly available.
You're constantly available with the advantage of working. You choose when you're going to work and then when you leave, you leave. So the women I know, but it doesn't mean it's not happening, but not in a great degree to my knowledge.
Mm. So I guess an overarching question then to end, has the internet been good or bad for sex work?
Good. Like, I think it's been good and it's enlightened a lot of people. It's given the women a lot of choices, the establishment owners choices. So I think it's been good. So long as there are rules re children, animals, as long as there's criteria of what's not acceptable.
Mm. Well, Kate, thank you for sharing your story with me. I do appreciate it. It's something that I think people are inherently interested in that they don't understand much about.
Thank you.
Thank you,
everyone. Bye-bye.
That was Kate, a brothel owner from Sydney, talking to me there. And that is all from us at The Briefing today. Be sure to check back next Monday when we drop parts 3 and 4 of our Sex Work in 2024 series. We will be diving deeper into sex work side hustles, whether your boss can fire you for having an OnlyFans, and whether it's really possible to make a living from it. If you'd like to see more of The Briefing, check us out on Instagram at The Briefing Podcast and on YouTube and TikTok, search Listener Newsroom, that's LISTNR. I'm Sasha Barbagat. Bension and I will be back with the headlines at 6 tomorrow morning.